The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick, and it is that time of year again, March Madness, when, at least for a month, college basketball is the thing in sports. It's inescapable.
It's Butler with 2 seconds. He's got to put it up.
The men's game is changing in ways that have been controversial for fans and some disappointing, and I'm thinking about the advent of the transfer portal and the one-and-done stints for student-athletes.
It ain't what it used to be. It ain't what I hope it returns to. And I'm not saying I don't want kids to have the same freedom as coaches or sports writers or anybody to move in. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is the product ain't that good right now.
Meanwhile, women's college basketball has emerged as an increasingly electrifying force on the sports scene. It's drawing record ratings. And right now, Caitlin Clark of the Iowa Hawkeyes is as well known to fans in the game as LeBron James. And that's not something I would have foreseen in my early days as a sports writer. So I sat down the other day with the New Yorker sports writer, Louisa Thomas. What in God's name has happened to men's college basketball? It used to be a very exciting thing. March would come around, and there would be a pool in every workplace in America, and people would have all kinds of opinions, and there were established stars and all the rest. And now, I gotta say, not so much.
I want to note that you just did something that a year ago, 2 years ago, would have been completely unheard of. You qualified college basketball as men's college basketball.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, men's college basketball is still very big, and CBS will be paying hundreds of millions of dollars for the honor of airing it. Last year, you know, more than 12 million people watched the finals. That was a record low. More than 9 million people watched the women's final. That was a record high. 12 million is still more than 9 million. You know, let's not get like way too carried away, but it's true. You know, part of that has to do with the turnover in college basketball because the best players leave for the NBA very early. And there hasn't been a kind of charismatic superstar like, you know, Zion Williamson at Duke, where the sort of the big school and the big player were just the perfect match and kind of attracted all this dynamic attention. Part of it is there is a kind of just excitement about the newness of the women's game that has people talking. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Caitlin Clark. It's Angel Reese at LSU. It's the coaches. You know, Kim Mulkey is a huge figure.
Coach Mulkey, 10 minutes to get to a Final Four. What do you tell your team to get there now?
Make free throws and layups. If I was watching this game, I'd turn it off. Look at that score, would you? That's some bad offensive basketball. It might be something to these balls being too bouncy, but that's some bad ball. Make your layups, make your free throws, play hard for 10 minutes and see what happens.
All right, thanks, Coach.
Don Staley is like a huge figure. Gino Auriemma is a huge figure. And the men's coaches are kind of like, they're yesterday's, you know, superheroes.
Yeah, it's like Rick Pitino whining at press conferences.
Exactly. We've seen that before. We saw that a decade ago. You know, his scandals are old. They're stale, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't even throw a chair across the court.
Exactly.
Yeah. What kind of shit fit is that?
Exactly. Can't hold a candle to one of Kim Mulkey's sequin outfits, you know?
There you go.
So I think that's part of it, too. They're just these kind of great, dynamic characters and budding rivalries and a sort of sense of freshness to the whole thing.
And it makes no sense in the men's game. If you're a star in your freshman year or sophomore year, it makes absolutely no sense to play in your junior and senior year for economic reasons. Why would you risk a career-ending injury in your junior year or senior year and then be forced to make a living like a normal human being as opposed to someone who could quite possibly make a fortune as a pro basketball player?
It might not even make sense to go to college at all. You know, you could go to the G League. You could go to Europe. You know, great MVPs are coming out of Europe these days.
Yeah.
Now, there is an argument that with the NIL money, name, image, and likeness money, you can get sponsorships. You can get millions of dollars, even if you are playing college basketball. And the best college basketball player in the country, Zach Edey, who plays for Purdue, is making a lot of money. And that has, you know, he's not a freshman. And that's part of a reason why. But still, I think you're right. There's just not a great reason to stick around for 4 years unless you just really love the college experience.
One other question about the men's game, although this may spread everywhere. It was amazing to me when I saw my, you know, news alerts the other day that the Dartmouth men's basketball team, unionized. This is not, in all due respect to Dartmouth, this is not a good basketball team. This is not a basketball team that's its players are making a fortune or that there's a fortune to share.
Right.
How did this happen? Why Dartmouth, and what is it going to lead to?
That's a huge question, a good question. And the NCAA would like to know very much the answer. Thank you. Dartmouth is writing a very kind of like carefully worded statement about how it really respects unions and it's very happy that it has all these unions. However, its student athletes are students first, and therefore this is an academic enterprise and they are not athletes at all. So
Dartmouth is resisting.
Yes.
This effort.
They're expected to appeal. I don't actually know if they've appealed yet.
I'm speaking with The New Yorker's Louisa Thomas. More in a moment.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit newyorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount. All right, let's get to the subject that we really want to talk about. I'm watching these games, and I'm watching these highlights on SportsCenter in the morning of Caitlin Clark. It's not that she's good. It's not that she's great. She's insane.
Up in time, Clark for the win.
She dribbles down the court and she stops at the logo, 40 feet away. And it's not like it's the end of the quarter or the end of the half. She's just pulling up and dumping him in from 40 feet. What is going on?
Just like the coach drew up the play, right?
Oh my God. I actually
turned on an IO game earlier this season and I thought I was watching the highlights. Like I thought it was halftime and they were showing the highlights, but no, it was playing in real time. It was just like one logo three after another. I mean, it was absolutely bananas. She is like just, she's got, you know, the whole old cliche, she's got ice in her veins. Like, I'm sorry, but she does.
No,
like,
any other player, I can't think of any other player, including Pete Maravich, who didn't shoot threes because of when he played. But even Steph Curry doesn't shoot from 40 feet on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Is it a case of unbelievable skill or radical impatience?
I think that players know to crowd her as soon as she gets anywhere near the three-point line, which is one of the reasons why she is also the best passer in the country. Well,
she seems to look to pass. I know it sounds insane after what I just said, but she also looks to pass first.
Phenomenal passer. Just such great court vision.
So tell me a little bit about Caitlin Clark. Where does she come out of? How did this player
become herself? I'll give you one guess.
herself?
What letter to Iowa? Iowa letter to Iowa. She wants to stay home. She's from Iowa. There is a statue of her in Butter at the Iowa County Fair, or State Fair. She is a pretty low-key person. She's declined most interview requests, including my own, but still hoping to change that. And she is, you know, she's very wealthy now because of these NIL deals.
Do we know how wealthy and what those deals are like?
I think it's several million. I mean, it's Gatorade. It's Nike. Yeah. They're big, big deals. And she's, you know, she's managed by Excel, which is one of the top basketball endorsement, you know, agencies in the world. Mm-hmm. Or in the country, certainly. She's making a lot of money. And it's in the seven figures.
What are her plans?
She has declared for the WNBA draft. She will be the number one pick by the Indiana Fever. So she's going to stick around in the Midwest. But she, you know, she could potentially change the landscape of women's sport. The question is whether or not she can carry that attention with her into the pros and also whether or not she can leave some of that attention behind. Like, to what extent is this a unique phenomenon around a unique player? And to what extent is this a, like, something people are turning in and they're going to watch, you know, women's basketball now?
Let's ask the uncomfortable question. She's certainly not the first phenomenal basketball player in the women's game. What role, if any, does race have to play with her popularity and the amount of attention she's getting?
Oh, you can't ignore it. I mean, certainly there have been, you know, women's basketball, like men's basketball, is a predominantly black sport. And the stars are predominantly white, historically. I mean, and that
in the women's game.
In the women's game. And that does not mean that these women don't deserve to be. I mean, Sue Bird is one of the great all-time players. You know, mm-hmm. Diana Taurasi is the greatest ever, like, just full stop. These women are great players in their own right, and I don't think anyone would dispute that. At the same time, like, it's disproportionate. The attention they get is, you know, it's startling to see how many of the game's biggest stars are white, given how many of the game's greatest players are black. And you can see some of the racial disparity. You know, it kind of came to the fore last year during the finals when the LSU team, which was led by Angel Reese, who is a very outspokenly, you know, proud black woman, was...
And a phenomenal player.
And one of the best players in the country. And still one of the best players in the country. Was criticized for sort of making these kind of taunting gestures that Caitlin Clark had also made. And Caitlin Clark was never criticized for the same thing. I mean, there's a racial element.
In other words, Angel Reese's gestures were racialized in the attention they got in the press.
Exactly. And you kind of can't ignore that. At the same time, I don't think there's any person who's, you yourself a watcher, like, you can't say that Caitlin Clark doesn't deserve the attention that she's
No, she's
got.
Her heart out. She's extraordinary, as is Angel Reese.
You also see it playing out now in that South Carolina is the best team in the country, and it's led by Dawn Staley, who is another mm-hmm. outspoken black woman. And that team doesn't get the attention, you know, that it deserves and the respect that it deserves. It's undefeated again. It was undefeated last year. Would have probably won the championship if not for a very, very cold shooting night from outside and for Caitlin Clark herself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a team that, yeah, it deserves more attention. And, you know, does race play a part? This is America, probably.
Now, one amazing dimension to sports in general, but even college sports that has changed things, is the legalization of gambling. The legalization of gambling is just ubiquitous, both as a matter of advertising, as a matter of activity. How has that changed the sport, if any? How aware are the players of this dimension of their jobs?
I mean, betting has been around for a long time. Legalized betting is relatively new. But when I was in fourth grade, I won $50 on my mom's office, you know, pool.
Okay, wait a minute. You won $50? That is seriously impressive.
I know. Well, thank you. But yeah, just to say that gambling's been around, but it's in the billions of dollars. You know, I've seen estimates of last year, you know, this was an estimate of how much money they thought people were going to pay, but it was like $15 billion or something. What's actually more unnerving to me than like a lot of people are placing bets, most of these bets that people are placing are $20 bets in their office pool. What's sort of more kind of unnerving to me and where I really see it is how much betting money is infiltrating the coverage of these games.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like...
And it's talked about as part of the conversation of the sport. You watch an NFL game, you watch any game of anything, and it's just, you know, Shaquille O'Neal is telling Charles Barkley that he's got X dollars on the game and is he taking the under or the over?
It's every moment in the game is sort of potential, you know, time to get a hit of money, I guess.
All right, let's try to help our gambling listeners. I know you're loath to make picks, but there are listeners out there struggling to fill out their brackets. Are there any potential March Madness upsets or Cinderellas you want to predict?
I'm
at this early
so
juncture,
indecisive.
Who looks like a good shot at winning the NCAA title? Who's in the mix?
On the women's side, I cannot go against South Carolina. They are just such a phenomenally good basketball team. On the men's side, I'm gonna go with UConn to repeat.
Really?
Yeah. Why not?
Really?
They're kind of like a scrappy college basketball league.
Will you be putting cash money on this?
Absolutely not. I'm not insane.
I think that'd be a conflict for a sports writer, right?
Yeah. Well, no.
Of some
kind.
Are you
kidding?
It's legal. All right. Well, I'm saving my money, not betting it on the college sport, waiting for the injuries to come clear on the Knicks, and then I'm all in on that.
All
Louisa
in on that.
Louisa Thomas, thank you so much.
Bless you.
You can find Louisa Thomas's writing at newyorker.com on virtually every sport. And if you're hungry for more basketball knowledge, you'll want to check out Louisa's terrific profile of Nikola Jokic, probably the best player in the game right now. It's at newyorker.com. I'm David Remnick. That's the program for today. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Meryl Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Louis Mitchell. This episode was produced by Max Balton, Adam Howard, Kala Leah, David Krasnow, Jeffrey Masters, and Louis Mitchell, with guidance from Emily Botine and assistance from Michael May, David Gable, and Alejandra Deckett.
And we had additional help this week from Alicia Zuckerman and Jared Paul.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.